Yeah, right.
Dude,
on.
I cannot believe that was right on cue.
Oh man, can we hear this? Yeah. That's in the podcast. I'm gonna let it go one more time. Oh,
it died.
It's kind of there. For those of you who missed it, it's my infamous alarm.
And it happened to be right during the.
That's perfect.
And here's what I do.
Maybe
when
we
I hear
need
it,
a remake.
That's all I hear is.
Maybe we need to remake our jingle, dude, and put that in there.
That's kind of PTSD. That's kind of nightmare, so.
Yeah, I would hate the beginning of our recordings, and I would like buck every recording because then I know what I'm about to hear. Maybe our listeners would stop listening too. All 3 million of them. Isn't that what we're up to? 3 million people?
Minus about 6 zeros.
Oh, I forgot. I forgot to. Oh, no. 3? We got 3 people?
That took me a second.
Wait.
Math's hard. It's the afternoon. I think it's actually that wouldn't work.
That's five zeros. Okay.
Is that right?
See?
No, it's 6 zeros.
No.
Because you cross over.
Yeah, you're right.
I was right. You made me question myself, dude.
See? I have.
You got me.
I'm growing.
Yeah, you made me question myself.
Which never.
My confidence level is going down.
Oh, no.
I'm just kidding.
I don't want to do that.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, man. I need to, before we do this, I need to reset this alarm because I do need to do what it told me.
What is the deal during the recording? We're doing it wildly different time than last time. So
I know, which is why my alarm is going off because I should be doing something else right now, but instead we're recording.
Yeah.
Which is great. I'm glad we're recording. I'm glad we got around to it.
No, we need to. Yeah, this is important. We were talking about
if
crispy,
nothing else for us,
like crispy Rice Krispies right before we got on.
Dude.
And we were talking about sweet tooth and coffee is the one sweet thing. Like I don't really eat a lot of sweets. Now, if you consider like pizza sweets, cause they're, you know, sugar and pizza crust, you know, I'll kill some pizza crust. Now I will tell you, I haven't had a pizza in smokes, dude, long time. But I'm talking about sweets like chocolate.
There's
and
sweets
sugar.
In pizza?
Well, I mean, like, there's sugar in pizza crust, man.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
In McDonald's French fries, you know, they just sprinkle sugar on that. I'm just kidding. I don't know.
Oh, I
Why
was like,
Why do you keep going
bro,
back to them, man? Why do you keep
I was
going back
so
to them?
Drunk.
They're addictive.
Dude. Oh, man. That would have been. That would hurt me.
I think they sprinkle crack on it, and that's why you just keep coming back. Like, I gotta have it.
You know who's which this may be a controversial thing. Is McDonald's versus Burger King French fries?
Oh, McDonald's blows them out the
trash. Are you serious?
Oh, yeah.
No,
all
dude.
Day long,
okay.
Dude.
Okay.
All day long.
What about Rally's fries?
No idea what Rally's fries is.
No way.
What's Rally's fries?
You've never had Rally's fries?
Don't even know what you're talking
or Checkers?
About. Or Checkers? Checkers? Like that place? Like a burger place?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Like in Florida?
Well,
I think I've seen them in Florida. I don't know.
Well, they're
them.
Not Checkers here, but they're Checkers and Rally's, I believe, are like. They're just called different. They're pretty much the same thing.
Are you talking about the waffle fry? Or are you talking about something else, like
no,
a restaurant?
It's a restaurant.
Nah. All I'm saying is in Estes Park, there's a burger place called Burgers and Gyros. Probably best. Well, actually, the absolute best fries I've ever put in my mouth is in Costa Rica up in the mountains at a place called Boomerang. It's called Boomerang. And it is... I mean, drive 3 hours out of your way to go eat them is that good.
Really?
But here in the States, it's like, I love Henson fries, the actual Henson fries,
the spicy ones.
Those are good. But McDonald's, hands down, consistent countrywide best fries.
Well, maybe you can make that argument, but I like the size of.
So you like
Burger
the
King?
Thicker fry.
Yeah, they're a little bit thicker.
That's why
and
I like
they got
McDonald's.
Like a crispy. No, some
McDonald's did all the
McDonald's
market research.
Just straight up, like,
no,
you'll hold it up and it's just boom.
Well, that's because you didn't eat it right away. You can't let it sit for 10 minutes, man. You got to eat it. It comes out, burn your mouth. That's when you got to eat it. Straight up,
that's
just
why,
like, ah.
That's why I like so much ketchup because ketchup is cold. It cools down the fries
yes,
in my
you can
mouth.
Eat them. Now, you let those McDonald's, you try to save them for later, forget
oh,
it, dude.
Oh, dude, no.
I don't know what they do, but they're like,
nope. I can't believe you just said that.
Well,
like,
I mean.
Save it for later
yeah,
and McDonald's
like,
fries in the same sentence
styrofoam,
does not belong.
Styrofoam. Gooey,
oh,
gooey,
dude.
Droopy styrofoam.
Okay, funny story real quick, and then we got to jump in, is I did this sermon illustration one time when I was a youth pastor back in Owosso. And first it was like, no, when I was, I think it was when I was candidating for the position. And I did this thing about trading up. Like sometimes we think that we know better, but God oftentimes or always has something better for us, but we hold on to what we think is best and we miss out on God's best. So anyways, I was like doing this thing, trading up. And I had this literally, it was a, one of those, happy meal size, just the paper bag, small fry in my truck. And I found it, dude. Well,
if you find it, they're crispy.
No.
They're hard.
Listen, they were already hard. This kid, I asked him if he wanted to trade up for a t-shirt and he was like, nah, I want the fries.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, you just totally wrecked my illustration, bro. Yeah, just you, take you the t-shirt. Up, and he goes, no, I want these fries.
They're that good.
I'm not kidding you. He was I think like a seventh grader. He graduated high school. I went to his house for a graduation party, dude. And he goes, dude, come to my room. I want to show you something. And I was like, all right. So I walked to his room and he showed me. Bag was like completely yellow. The fries were still intact. Like, looked like they
glass
just
case.
No, dude, he just had them sitting on one of his bookshelves.
That's hilarious.
And I was like,
That's hilarious.
It's going to be a minute before
that's like
I
the
eat
70
McDonald's.
Year old Twinkie. Have you seen that?
Just no,
didn't move at all. It just, it's like the same from the beginning.
It's just like straight.
They've been watching it for
a brick
70
in your
years.
Stomach.
I think a fry conversation is interesting because I love In-N-Out fries. I love
those are good too. I love In-N-Out
fries.
What's
that? What's that one restaurant? Take Home a Sack. Stink. What's the name of that
Whataburger?
Restaurant? Whataburger? The other one. Keep going. It's a burger place. They have the grilled burgers. They have one in Springfield. They used to have one here. They don't have it anymore. And it says Take Home a Sack up in the restaurant.
I know what you're talking about, but
at us on this podcast.
Yeah, they're
fools.
Like,
those
are
great.
What are the
really
six
skinny.
People or three people?
Yeah, they're really skinny. And they're like the Freddy's fries, you know?
Steak and Shake.
Yes.
Steak and Shake.
So Steak and Shake fries, Freddy's fries, those are good. But McDonald's has found the magic in between the thick and the thin. They've got consistently good fries.
This is a
but
throwback.
You have to eat them right away.
This is a throwback to our last episode. But so you're saying when it comes to fries, size does matter.
I think so. There is a medium size.
I would
that
agree
matters.
With you. I would
there's
agree
a,
with you.
There's a medium size that matters.
And that's
but there's
why
always
I like
that oddball
Burger King.
There's always that oddball in your fry holder. And it's like there's always weird looking one that's out that stands out, you know. Little short crispy one or the real tall dangly one.
What?
No, no. Hey, before we step into our context for this week, I wanted us to revisit a few things from last episode.
Okay.
So just
okay, let's
because there's a little bit of like feedback questions, all that stuff that we got that would be kind of interesting to it'd be interesting to revisit because I think that conversation we had last week, which was a great one by the way, about church and size and does it matter? And then I'll talk to you about I wish we had our video on Reuben right now. take a deep breath.
All right.
Anyway,
church conversation.
Yeah, it was like it was good, and I don't think we could ever get to the end of that conversation. I think
yeah.
I think that conversation's an ongoing one, and unfortunately, I find myself going back to sometimes it's just a feeling, and you can't quite like you feel what it's not, but you can't describe what it is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's really hard to articulate.
Yeah.
In words that makes sense to anyone, unfortunately, anyone but you. It's almost like
you're in your own head.
It's a really relational thing too, because you're like, is you know when something's off. For example, like in our marriages, we know when like something's just not firing right, and like you're out of sync, or things are misunderstood, or whatever, and you're like, did I do something? Was it something I did? Something I said? Or it's just like, man, I woke up on the wrong side of the bed, you know, but like it is, you know, it's easier to
say what it
to sense
not.
When something
when
is
off
than it is to say, hey, here's where we're heading and here's how we get there.
Well, it's pattern recognition and we've found something that fits. And then when it's off, it's like twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are. But if someone says twinkle, twinkle, little sky, how I, you're like something's
you'd be
wrong.
Like,
yeah.
That's so the same tune.
It's because of our pattern recognition, you know, we have that. One of the questions we got was from Rachel in Orlando. She said this, thanks for the conversation. I don't know how to help others find their gifting. So this was kind of like the statement. I don't know how to help others find their gifting. I think I'm too busy doing because there is so much to do and no one to do it. So I jump in. This is like the struggle of leadership is finding the right people to put in the right, you know, position. And then she goes on to say, I'd love this conversation to get to a practical level of how, excuse me. And then thank you for your time. And that you guys put into this, say the quiet part out loud. Thank you, Rachel, for the question. This along with some of the other questions that I personally received, you might've got a text or two or talked to somebody, but it comes down to, a lot of it was about church size, which is all relative. And I think there's a national definition of what small, medium, large, and mega is. Those numbers are there, but I don't think anybody cares. Like I think we said last on the podcast that nobody really cares how many people are there because they don't define a church small, medium, large, mega outside of how they felt.
Well, I think the average person, because the average person doesn't have that data. Like they're not walking in and be like, hey, can you show me your latest spreadsheet?
Right.
So I can determine whether or not I want to go here because I really want to go to a small church.
Right.
And if you're above this many people, I'm moving on to the next one kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so it's a...
And the whole gifting thing, so tied into that, which is I think people want to be known, as what we said last time. Like I think the feeling in church is we want someone to know me.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't really matter how many people are there, am I known? But then on the gifting thing, I really think it's tied. When I'm thinking through my experience and people walking with us in ministry and finding their gifting, I really think it has to do with that known thing. And I think most of us don't have margin. Most of us don't have margin in our lives to take time. So like Rachel's point is there's so much to do and not many people to do it. So I jump in. We don't give ourselves enough margin to spend time watching, observing, and seeing people in their gifting and inviting people into the process. So you and I have worked together for, we're on our fourth year and
fifth year, dude. Four. We hit four in January. Isn't that crazy?
Anyway, so yes, we're working on our fifth year. Well, one of our conversations always has been, dude, always take someone with you. I'll always take someone with me. You always take someone with you. And so, yes, we have to jump in and do a lot of stuff, but let's do it together.
Yeah, and that's where I think you find a lot of joy in serving. And I truly resonate with Rachel and people who kind of have that mindset. And so a couple of things that have helped me along the way, you ask me this question all the time. What's the worst that could happen? And when you, and not that you want to like always think in catastrophic terms,
like negative, yeah.
But it's helpful to put it in perspective because you're like, you think in your head or you've built this up of like, man, if I don't do it, this is going to happen. This is going to fall apart. These people are not going to show up or whatever. And then it's all gonna, you know, go to hell in a handbasket, so to speak. And
people are literally gonna go to hell. That's kind of the, in our mindset, if I don't do this, people are literally gonna go to hell.
Right. You know? And so you think these, in your head, you have this idea of what would happen. And if you can just get in the habit of saying that actually out loud, maybe to a trusted friend, maybe to a partner in ministry or a partner in like even a spouse, is to say, hey, here's what I'm believing right now is that if I don't show up and I don't do this, here's what I think is going to happen. And then talking through that and really saying it out loud is like, oh, even if that did happen, it still would be okay. Like, I mean, God's still in control and people are still being changed or all that kind of stuff. And then the second thing, what was I going to say? It was, what's the worst that could happen? And then, she said something.
Her thing was like, how do I identify it? Like the how? Is that what you're saying? Her question or what?
Yeah. When is it okay to say, you know what? I'm gonna let this
fall.
I'm gonna let this fall.
Yeah.
And that's really been freeing for me, since, you know, since I've been at Bethel, because we feel like we're the ones responsible to hold it all up. And so I think of that song Gyra just popped in my head of like, you're not, you can never let me down because you were never holding me up.
Right.
Kind of thing. And so when we think about the church in specific, because the conversation was surrounding large church, small church, whatever.
Right.
It's not ours to hold up. And that's really difficult as a ministry leader.
Yep.
Because you don't want to let something fall. Like, if it's within your power, if it's within your realm, like, why wouldn't you?
And why not? Go the extra mile, yeah, do like, the thing, suffer for Jesus.
Yeah. And so, but you can only do that for so long before you get to an unhealthy place and you're no good to yourself, your family, the people around you, the people that you lead, and the people that serve alongside you.
Yeah.
And so, it's oftentimes that it really doesn't fall apart, but it's almost taking yourself to that place in your mind to say, if this does fall apart, it's okay.
Right. That's really good. I think
that's really hard to say.
I think the, just to wrap up so we can go on to the topic of the day, but the idea of how to recruit, how to find gifting, how to put people in the right place in the right time, truly what has to happen is you have to, like, you may have an aspiration for the way your church should look. Mm-hmm. And the reality is there's not enough bodies for all that. And so you don't add things or ministries or certain elements that you want until God sends those people. Hmm. You also have to have enough margin to be able to notice that they're around you. And obviously prayer. I mean, we pray all the time that God would send the right people in the right time.
Yeah.
And then I love what you said earlier, making the decision purposely to let it fall. I think what a lot of churches do is they get comfortable with mediocre, and so they get used to comfortable, just whatever, it didn't work out. We're not talking about letting it just fall apart all the time and always live in a culture of falling apart. That's chaos and no one's going to come. But purposefully letting it fall actually lets people see that there's a need, and also lets people see that, oh, I might be able to do that. And it also lets God move people into positions that they can actually fit in them. Best example I have is we have, obviously, just like most churches, we have a band and a team, and we needed drummers and we needed, you know, certain instrumentalists. And so we made a decision. We picked a date 6 weeks out and said, this Sunday, no one's going to be in the drum doing the drums. And why are we doing this? We're going to say, hey, did you guys notice that there's no one on the drums? Because this is a position we need. What it was on purpose letting it not be there so that God could work in people's lives. And what's cool is that day, two different drummers that are actively drumming right now came up and said, God's been asking me to do this, and today was the perfect day for that opportunity to show up. You guys mentioned it. I saw that it was empty. Here I am. And I think so purposefully in our ministries, whether it's kids ministries or check-in or host team or whatever, purposefully plan in some gaps so that people see that there's a need and you invite them in to see that. So if you're always the one doing, what if you plan this week to not do and sit back and watch? And when people say, hey, where's this? Say, yeah, that's something that we're hoping God brings someone to that position. And that really helps. And so we've seen it work that way into how in a practical way. And I also wonder who in the church is the kind of has discernment when they interact with people. Because now we're at a position to where we interact with people, and in our minds we're like, oh, I think that person would be perfect for XYZ ministry, you know? And so because we know what we're looking for, you know?
So. Yeah, it's almost like defining what you... It's helpful to define what you're looking for, what the ask is.
Yes.
So that you can really evaluate who would be good at this.
Right.
And unfortunately, I think sometimes you do have to do for a little while so that you yourself understand what you're asking somebody to do.
Yep. Yep.
And walk a mile in those shoes. And sometimes that creates a lot of stress because you're like, man, I hope this isn't forever, but I'm willing to walk this road so that I can wrap my mind around it so that I can then pass it on to somebody else.
Yeah.
But it is a challenging thing. And I'm terrible at recruiting because my hesitation, I don't ever want to be the reason that somebody walks away from the church or whatever, as if I have that power.
Well,
but
it's a know? Sensitivity, which is empathy, which is really good, you know?
Yeah, but I think sometimes it can go to the point where, like, I just don't make the ask because I don't want to be a burden on somebody, or I don't want them to say yes because of the position that I hold or whatever.
Yeah.
And oftentimes that's not the case. People say yes to the things they want to say yes to. And they're, a lot of times the reality is people are waiting to be asked.
Yeah. Well, and I think today, even today earlier, I had a conversation with one of our leaders calling them to something greater. And it was an hour and a half conversation. And it's something that I've been praying about, looking at, observing, had the margin to be able to see it, called them to it. And it was interesting because it was, yes, I've been experiencing and sensing the exact same thing, waiting for the time. I got another text from one of our other leaders that was like, it's burning in me. I got to do something. Tell me where to get out of the boat. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Tell me where to get out of the boat. Well, that didn't just happen overnight. I think we've been planting and watering for season upon season, praying that God would bring that fruit. And I think it's a long-term process where I'm going to water, you're going to plant, I'm going to care, you're going to care, and God's going to bring the increase. And I think we need to not forget the element that God is in this mix, and God is the one working on people, and he knows the needs we have, and let's ask him to fulfill those needs, you know?
And I think one other element, if I'm thinking about my own story and in my life and some of the struggles that I've had with purpose and am I doing the right thing? Am I doing what I should be doing or that God's equipped me to do, is truly understanding your limits and being willing to live within those limits instead of, and I'm not saying that you don't ever push the boundary, that you don't ever say yes to, you know, something that you feel impressed upon, even though you know it's going to stretch you. I think those times are important too. But on a general basis, like living within and operating in the limits that God has given you and the capacities and the gifting that you yourself have. Because sometimes we're called upon to be a jack of all trades, and that's not fair or healthy, or if it's always that way.
Well, for a small season,
yeah,
I think people that are passionate about serving Jesus do that. But long term, it's definitely not sustainable.
Right.
You know, there's certain areas of ministry that I'll do, but I die a slow death.
Yeah.
And I think the fear of recruitment is putting someone or asking someone to be in something that's going to be a slow death. I think about one of the things we pushed in our ministry in Central America and then also here at Bethel is that whenever God or someone ask if we're ready, just say yes, and along the way the path will be made straight. One of the people that I kind of listen to as much as I can is Larry Osborne, and his thing is he always says God draws straight lines out of crooked sticks, and the truth is we're all crooked sticks, and yet God uses us anyway, you know. And so always be willing to say yes. And you can always see the passion in people. I can think of a few people right now just off the top of my head. Hey, we're going to do this thing. And they're the first to sign up. They're the first to say yes. They're the ones that are just going to be there. Even if it's watching kids, if it's sweeping the parking lot, if it's going on a mission trip, they're always saying yes. The danger is to put them in so many positions that they burn out, stretch thin, and then the only way for them to get out of it is leave your church, you know?
Yeah.
And so we don't want that. And so one of the things we build into our system is breaks and required time off and rotation and make sure that you're connecting and talking and living on mission, because all of us need a break. All of us need a moment to catch our breath. You know, that's normal, you know? And all of us open-handedly need to be able to experience this ministry really is not working out for me. I want to try something else. That's fine. You know, because eventually people are going to settle in where they're gifted, you know?
Yeah.
I think about the personality, or if we want to call the character traits of the different people in our ministries. And it's almost like we've experienced the funnel or the sifting of people into different positions that we can almost now peg someone when they walk through the door just by talking to them. Like, oh, you'd be awesome on the safety team. Oh, you'd be great on the, you know, working with the babies. Oh, you'd be great working with the kids. You'd be great in the parking lot. You know what I'm saying? It's like you have this, like, almost like we've seen character traits shift, but that also doesn't leave room for God to work. And so some people sometimes surprise you. They're not out of a ball of French fries sticking out of the, you know, the McDonald's fries, and that's the good one, you know?
Right.
So every once in a while, someone breaks the mold, and that's fine, you know? Mm-hmm. That's why we need to hold our hands open. We keep talking about this because I think it's something we should talk about, and maybe we don't get to our topic. I don't know. But
yeah.
But our the idea of gifting is really interesting because I think a lot of us want to take a test and do a spiritual gift assessment and then just peg people based on that assessment. My issue with that, and we try to allow people to do that, but it's not something that we put a lot of like emphasis on. For us, it's basically a starting point. Fill out this assessment, and today it says that this is maybe your inclination. Our suggestion is go and try this area of ministry, and if not, you know, there's some people you look at and they don't smile very well and they have a mean mug on their face, and yeah, you probably shouldn't be the greeter at the door because that's not going to work out for you, you know? Mm-hmm. So the spiritual gift assessment is good, but it's just like a personality test. It's like, that doesn't peg me in a hole that, you know, I got to stay in all the time. I can change and the Spirit can change me and I can evolve and be somebody different, you know? So all that to say, I think spiritual gifting is hard to define. Man, I'm rambling about this one because this one's a big one for me. You cannot discover your own gift on your own. Like,
yeah.
You can't look in the mirror and say, I have the gift of blah, or work in a ministry or whatever and say, yeah, I have this gift. A spiritual gift is like spiritual fruit. Other people eat your fruit. And so It's other people that affirm your gifting, not you affirming your gift, you know?
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing because... And I'm glad that it's not us that picks our gift or is even able to identify our own gifting in a lot of ways, because oftentimes in my life, that is what the enemy uses to convince me that I'm a fraud.
Yep.
Like that
you only should be
people,
doing this.
Yeah, people say you're this, but really,
you know who you
no,
are.
No, yeah, you know who you are.
You and I know who you are.
Yeah, and I just had a conversation with a good friend of mine even this morning that was like, or last night, that was very, I had the opportunity to operate in my gifting, but talk through something with them that I've experienced myself, because I know the lies of the enemy. I know the times where the enemy says, oh yeah, see, like you try to do this or you claim that you're this, but look at this based on this, this, and this, dude, you've got everyone fooled.
Yeah.
Because when people affirm your gift and when people benefit from your gift and are exhorted and pushed or encouraged to love and good works through your gift, then you kind of get some traction there. And if you're not careful, then you have to really watch to not use your gift as a way to build yourself up or to
manipulate.
Yeah. To manipulate people for sure.
Yeah.
And, because it's all for the glory of God and for the good of others. It's not even really for you. Cause I would almost, there's times where I would, I've been told by many people that one of my gifts is shepherding. And there's times where I don't have the capacity to do that because I'm like Rachel running around feeling like I got to be the one that does everything. And then I don't have really time to sit and shepherd and walk with and those kinds of things. And that's when the enemy's like, see, dude, you know, shepherd, you don't even care about people. You had that conversation over there and you weren't in the conversation.
What you had to do.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. And so like, it's a hard thing.
I'm sorry. All right. We'll talk to you later. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know how your mind sees, I don't know if yours does this, but my mind has like a screen that plays and memories. Like when someone's talking, if it's something that triggers a memory, it like plays in my mind. And just now I saw you on a fam jam running around trying to fulfill like five different roles.
Oh, it was awesome.
And it was so funny because
I failed so hard.
But literally in my mind's eye, you split into like five people and went and split yourself and ran different directions. And it was the funniest moment. Cause I'm like, what are you doing? And you're like, I'm doing this. And I was like, you don't have to do that. Someone else could do that. And it shocked you because you're such a doer. You like go out and do. Mm-hmm. And it's like you had a table under one arm. You had this other thing under your other arm. You were going to do this over here, but it was on the other side of the campus. It was funny. That was a funny moment. In my head, I saw it all. And you went, roop, five people, and you ran five different directions.
Well, and what's funny is all along the way, people were like, hey, you need help with anything? And I'm like, no, I'm good. We just totally said the same thing at the same time.
Which is what that you would say. Funny. Exactly.
I know. Because
hey, can I take that table? No. I'm good.
Which I think is my
serving people.
My gift at of serving, and then even some shepherding is like, I want everyone else to be okay.
Yeah, I'll serve you.
So
sit down.
I'll take the burden on my back so you can sit and rest and enjoy an experience.
Yep.
And all along the way, you don't realize how you're in some ways robbing people of the opportunity to actually operate in their gifting.
Well, and I think,
you know,
I think friendship is where this comes in. And so I think when we're in ministry, like you had a conversation with a friend last night, another one this morning, you and I are friends. We talk a lot of times. And I think a lot of our help and our encouragement and gifting is pointed out by our friends around us. And that's why it's so important to have people in your life.
Yeah.
Friends, church, but also friends, people that really know you. And yep. I think our topic that we were going to talk about today, which we probably should, because it's relevant to this conversation, is the older we get, the harder it is to make friends.
Yeah.
And the older we get, the more crotchety, cranky, whatever it is, or stubborn in our ways, you know, old dog, new trick stuff, we have a harder time making friends. So making new friends the older we get is really important, especially when we're talking about knowing what we're good at and not good at. We need people to call it out of us, you know, yeah. or call us to something better, you know? So friendship is an interesting, you don't know how many conversations I've had this year with many different people about how hard it is to make friends.
Yeah. As an adult, it's almost like, hopefully I'm not misunderstood when I say this, but like losing a spouse or like, and then starting over in that regard,
yep.
because you know, the energy and the effort that it took to get like your marriage or a deep, intimate friendship is not built in a day.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a lot of vulnerability. It takes a lot of accountability and trust
and patience and trust
working through hard things. And it's like to do that again, like I think you do reach an age where you're like,
nah.
I don't want to do that anymore.
I'm good.
Yeah. Like, and then, you know,
it's too painful.
Yeah.
Is what it feels like. You know, it's too much weight to carry.
Or you just don't feel like you have it in you anymore.
Yeah.
I think
being a kid, like under 12, mm-hmm. making quote unquote friends, it seems easy because you're in school and you're playing on a playground, you're running around. Like when I was a kid, we were outside all day long. You know,
yeah,
we didn't come home until dinner or whatever. And get into trouble, and your friends, you would do those things together. You get in fights, you get mad, you punch each other, you swear each other off, and the next day you do it again. You know, so
yep.
under 12, there's a certain friendship. Well, then you get a teenager, and you're kind of awkward, and you feel self-conscious. You're trying to figure out who you are. Well, then your friend group kind of narrows because then you identify a few people that are okay with that weirdness because they're weird too, you know, the awkwardness.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to college, and you separate. And so you lose a lot of times that little group that you had. College is done. Many times you move back and you're both older, and then you have to decide, are we still going to be friends? You know what I'm saying? I think there's a few people that are your friends for life and it's maybe one, maybe two, maybe just one that whether you see them or not, oh, they're my friend. You know what I'm saying? But the older you get, you don't have as much time to spend with them.
Mm-hmm.
It's valuable because you have a family or you have your job and your responsibility. So it takes longer and it costs more to develop the same friendship that you could develop it as a kid.
Yeah.
Because as a kid, you had countless hours with them. Or you go to youth camp.
Track, yeah.
You go to youth camp and in a week, you can develop the craziest relationships because 24 hours a day for 5 days, you're like with this person. Well, think about that. 24 hours times five is 120 some odd hours.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you come back home as an adult. how long is it going to take you to invest 120 some hours in somebody?
Years. And that's why, you know, this is sidebar note, but like why we encourage our adult volunteers to go to things like camp and go do those things, because we understand that that's literally, I mean, if you think about it, 24 times seven is, as we know,
167 or whatever,
as the beginning, right? 168. Yeah, you're right. 168.
Yeah.
And that is like, that's 168 weeks.
Yeah.
Cause you typically only, see them an hour, maybe two throughout the week at church. That is,
And you fast track it.
That's not
in that relationship
in 1 week.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. So that's, you know, and I think part of the lack of ability to make friends is you've got this thing in your head that like, I'm not going to put myself in a position to make friends.
Yeah, because a lot of it's give and take. And I think the need for it, the older we get, feels less. Mm-hmm. But I'll bet you the need for it is actually incrementally bigger the older you get.
I think so.
But we tend to drift apart and isolate instead of it. I think one of the reasons this topic came up for me was we've recently seen some of our older friends and people we love get married. And it's a interesting, like when I think about getting married again, I outright reject it. But when I've watched these people that I love lose a spouse and walk through a season without them and then find companionship that turns to marriage, I had to tell myself this weekend, even just right now, that Ray, you need to stop saying never, because you don't know what that's going to be. Because something about companionship, that relationship, that friendship, that closeness. And so one of the things I thought about over the weekend is I was like, why can't we decide, like you and me decide right now, Ruben, when I get old and one of us spouse dies or both of our spouse dies, which I mean, our wives are going to live longer than us, so we probably don't have to worry about this.
Yeah.
But let's say we did. Why don't we just like move into the same apartment building and move into like buy a house together or something? And I'm not saying in a creepy way, but more like, why not buy a house with like five bedrooms and move in our five friends, you know?
Yeah.
And then just live our days together. Maybe that's what an old folks home is. Maybe that's what that is.
Dude.
But I don't,
yeah, you're right.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about you're in good health. You're still fine. You're still living life, but you want friendship and companionship. Why not just buy a house and move in together? Who cares, you know? And so anyway, because what happens is usually is the older we get, the more isolated we get and separated from our friends. And then when one of us loses that close friendship, companionship of our spouse, we're living in a house all by ourselves.
Right.
Talk about a sad day.
Well, there's a weird thing that happens, because I do think there's relationships can be exhausting, but it's so worth the effort and time and energy that it takes to put into it. I'll give you a perfect example is like of rest and then not letting that period of time be too long is, you know, I've experienced a couple times where my wife and kids have been in the, in Michigan where we grew up and spending time with grandparents and trying to cultivate those relationships and things like that. And then I'll come home a little bit early or before they do or whatever. And it's nice because I can get some things done. But there is a point where if I'm left alone in a house by myself for too long, I said by myself and alone, same thing, my mind starts to almost play tricks on me.
Right.
As like, you are alone, because the physical reality is, I'm alone, but I'm not, I know that I have people that love me. But eventually you convince yourself, or you can convince yourself, nobody really cares about me. I deserve to be alone or whatever. And I think pushing through that in a larger context to say, I'm actually going to put myself in a position to be friendly to others, but also receive the benefit of the gifts that God's given other people.
Yep.
And receive the joy of having conversations with other people. And I'll be the first one that bucks against walking into a room filled with people that I don't know. Oh man, I hate it.
Slide against the wall.
Dude, seriously, hide in the corner and then like hold my breath and hope that somebody comes and talks to me or whatever. And we actually have meaningful conversation.
Yeah.
And have something in common.
Well, and I don't know what I am, but when I think about that scenario, walking into a room full of strangers, I'll look around the room and I'm going to talk to somebody. Like, I'm not going to slide on the wall. So I look around the room and I look for someone. And if they lock eyes with me, boom, I'm going to them. Hey, so how's it going? What's your name? And what's going on with you? You know what I'm saying? Because it's like, I'm not going to be the guy that's sitting in the corner. And it's weird, but when I was a kid, go hide in the corner. Don't talk to anybody. But the older I get, the more I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to make this awkward. I'm going to go try to talk to somebody.
See, that's so interesting. And I'm so different than that. So I was having this conversation with Jordan the other day that when I'm in a place that's familiar to me, I love it when people walk through the door because I can show them around. I can kind of fill them in on what's going on or who's there or whatever the case may be. Church, love interacting with new people that come through the door because this is a familiar place for me. I know what's happening. I know where to take them. I can be of service to them if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But when I walk into a place that is unknown to me and it's filled with people, oh man, my anxiety goes through the roof because I'm like, I say some stupid stuff and then I walk away and I'm like, why did I say that?
That's funny.
That doesn't even make sense. Like, oh man,
that's pretty funny.
I'm an awkward person I don't know what's going on.
That's funny. So. Yeah, I think making friends is really difficult, especially the older we get. I know it is. So we've talked about kind of the benefits of having friends, you know, just companionship, calling you out, knowing you, someone knowing you. But I mean, how do you, as an adult, how have you experienced finding a new friend? Like, how has that happened?
Well, it's like I said, I mean, putting myself in positions where new people are. I mean, I will never meet anyone new if I don't go anywhere new.
Yeah, but I know you have friends.
Yeah.
So how many friends are too many?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. And, you know, I don't know what the exact statistics are anymore, or if anyone else has come out with new research, especially in light of, like, I haven't really dove into this pre-COVID. So what I'm about to say could be totally skewed by now or different. But they were like, man, if you have like just one best friend as a man, specifically talking about males, is like, you are one of the luckiest people in the world.
Yeah.
And I'm like, really? I don't know. I mean, I don't know how many friends are too many, and I guess it would be determined by the level of friendship that you have with those people. You've referred to them before as different people as like Lego pieces, and like some people are like the big green mat that you can build houses on, and they can handle it.
They can handle all.
And
the
then there's like, you
that's
know,
Larry
the two,
Osborne. That's
the,
what that's came from him.
Oh, okay. Like the number two, the little two connectors or whatever.
What about the single connector?
Yeah, seriously. There's some people that are like that. And it's like,
yeah.
I don't really get that because I need more. I feel like I need more relationship than that. And a variety of friendships that I'm going to be able to benefit, and they'll benefit from.
Yep.
In different ways.
Yep. Well, and I think, okay, so maybe we don't have to define this, but I think we all understand what a good friend, like a best friend, good friend that you know, and then people that are just kind of people you know. But I mean, you'd say, oh, that's my friend over there, but I mean, there's no quality time spent. There's no walking with. We don't know a whole lot about their lives. We know enough just to say, well, I know them. And if I said, I've got 2,000 friends on Facebook. So, I mean, that's not, those aren't my friends. You know what I'm saying? I got, they're people that I've bumped into sometime. Some people I don't even know. I've never met them in person, but we're friends on Facebook, you know? So I think the definition of friends, especially with social media, has skewed. But when we're talking about friend, we're talking about like close, intimate, know me, you know what I'm saying? And I kind of think best friend, even that one for me personally, is hard to define. Like, who is that? What is that?
Yeah, what is a best friend, like, versus a
best friend versus really good friends?
You know, regular friend, yeah. Or like, I don't even know what the other terms would be outside of they're my friend.
So I mean, like you and I have spent tons of time together. We've walked through difficult things together. We've cried together, laughed together. Obviously, do a podcast together. We like each other. We're friends. I would say that Ruben's one of my closest friends.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to it, could I say Ruben's my best friend? Well, then I have all these people in my mind that are in my history.
Right.
That I'm like, am I exchanging like a Lego piece? all these people with different people. Or would I still consider those people that I really was close to my good friends? Yeah. And I think in some cases, yes. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know. I don't even know if it needs to be defined about best or good or anything like that. It's, do you have any? And can you name friends that know you?
Yeah. And I would say that's a good way to look at it as far as being known and knowing somebody. Yeah. Because we had a conversation with a lady last night she was giving some thought to, you know, her life and who knows her and all that kind of stuff. And she said, I don't know that these people know anything about me. And I think when you wake up to that realization and recognize that we actually all need people to know what's going on in our life.
Because an acquaintance or someone you're always around doesn't mean anything. That could be work, or it could be at the store. It could be a neighbor. Mm-hmm. It could be people at church. I mean, it's like, just because you're around them and you're familiar with them doesn't mean you know them or they know you.
Yeah. And we've had a huge influx, specifically here at Bethel, and I think we talked about this a little bit in our last episode, was the idea that I want to be known.
Yeah.
I don't want to just be a face in a crowd that disappears when I walk out the door.
Yeah.
I want somebody to know that, like, I'm having a great day. Yeah. I want somebody to know that I'm having a bad day.
Yeah. How you doing? And, I'm not sure.
Right.
Not doing that
and
good.
Be able to say that with honesty, and not just to complain, but to be able to have the freedom to say, man, I'm not doing okay today.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
That's a friend.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that empathy relationship can go beyond like actually experiencing that and that person not be considered like a close friend, but they at least know you. And you know what I'm saying? So I think that's why the church exists, and that's why God places in a family, is so that we would have people that could walk during those seasons. But even in our family, I look at the disciples, the 12 disciples, and there was, you know, there was some that were closer to each other than others, you know, and there's others that we have no clue anything about them at all. Their just name was on the list, you know, so we don't know what they did, who they were, how it is. But so I think there's, even in a group family, there are individuals that draw closer. Jesus himself had three people that were, three of the men that were closer to him, and one in particular that says the disciple that Jesus loved. So it's like, is that unfair? Not necessarily. That's just how it even functioned with Jesus.
Right.
I do think that there's stages and seasons of life that matters sometimes. And it's not a fair weather friend, but I do think seasons of life draw us together for a while.
Yeah.
And then we separate and we no longer are that like known by that person, but we could pick up the phone and have a call, or we could see him 10 years later and be like, hey, and have a good meal together.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I think all of us experience that.
Yeah.
But I think you have your kids, and so you're automatically going to be drawn to people with kids, you know?
Yeah.
You guys are a certain age and I'm a certain age. We're going to be drawn to people of that age, you know, 5 years older, 5 years younger. Me personally, I'm probably a really bad gauge because I have people that I know pretty well in all different age groups, old, young, you know, men, women, other cultures, Americans, Indians, Costa Ricans, Panamanians. You know what I'm saying? It's like I got this weird genre of relationships that I consider really good friends.
Yeah.
So that's why it's harder for me to define what we're talking about. I remember as a kid that I had a hard time making friends. And I was always frustrated about it. Now, I had moved to another country, and I was learning another language, and I felt like I didn't have friends. And my parents, just almost as a broken record over and over again, were like, if you want to have friends, you got to be friendly. If you want to have friends, you got to be friendly. So, and they were quoting scripture to me, which a man who has friends must show himself friendly. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's like, but they said that so many times that I started identifying in myself as like, oh, yeah, you don't have any friends because you're not that friendly. I mean, you have this face on you that looks like you're mad. You're hard to approach. You won't have any conversation. You never break the ice. You're never the first one to talk. So obviously you're not going to have friends because you won't do it. And as soon as I got that in my little head, and it was around 12, man, God and that action brought really good friends that I consider even to this day really good friends, you know, from when I was 12 years old. We don't live in the same countries. We don't talk all the time. But, man, pretty close friendship during my whole youth.
Yeah.
And I would say that eventually we lose those friendships. Maybe they're not completely lost because they've ingrained in the fabric of our life, but we're not like we were. Is that okay? Yeah, I think so. That's normal.
And I think one of the reasons that church community in specific and church family is so important is because there's unity and alignment. It's really difficult to be friends with and spend time with people who don't share values with you, who don't. I think there's some people that want to dance in both worlds. Like, and one of the benefits, I think, of being, you talked about this on Sunday, is it like being a fully devoted follower of Jesus and unashamedly is like, it really does, maybe, and I don't know if it's right or wrong, it's just reality, it weeds out some, and it does.
As far as the intimate, like personal relationship.
Right, for because sure. It's like, well, I'm not confident that person's going to point me in a direction that I want to walk. And so I'm not really going to be vulnerable with that person because I really don't trust that they would point me toward Jesus.
Yeah, and could you live out Jesus in front of that person? Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Should you open up and break, you know, intimate bread with that person? That probably wouldn't be smart.
Well, and I think even opening your home to somebody who, like, God has put in your path to be an example to is one thing, but sharing, like, and really seeking, I think it's a trust thing to be able to trust that the advice that you're given is not just hot air or manipulative or trying to get you to act in a certain way, but truly is for like your best interest. Mm. Is when you can find a friend that is looking out for your best interest and not just telling you something so that you will act a certain way so that they can keep that friendship, if what I'm saying is making sense, then you've really found a great friend, because that doesn't happen. But you have to put yourself in positions to be around people and even like-minded people. So for me, the church has been such a vital role in my life, good, bad, and ugly. I've learned a lot of things not to do, but I've also learned some things to do. Mm. And I've learned how to live my life in ways that are honoring and glorifying to God. But I've also, you know, gone off path sometimes. Yeah. And I've had some people that have brought me back and showed me a better way and loved me through that season.
Well, and if we want to string together our last two and this episode, like just string them right together, we talked about mental health. We talked about that whole area of, you know, like us looking at people and judging them based on their thing. And then them doing, like, God transformed their life, improving their mental health. And then we talked about the church, and now we're talking about friendship. They tie together because friendship and mental health and church family really are this cool ecosystem that God has placed us in. if I want better mental health, I need friends around me. If I want better friends around me, I need to be part of a church family. And then if I want to be a part of the church family, it's going to improve my mental health. And it kind of goes in a circle, like a really cool mm-hmm. ecosystem, you know? This part of this podcast is saying the quiet part out loud. I think as a pastor, one of the hardest things to truly be as a pastor is be good friends with people that are part of your church. Mm. And it really is, because whether it's intentional, unintentional or not, there's a certain level of expectation for your pastor, your spiritual leader, which is right. But when they see it all hang out mm-hmm. as a good friend, it turns off some people. Mm-hmm. And so the quiet part out loud is, you probably don't need to try to be best friends with your pastor. Now, if that's chemistry and chemically available and it happens, like, we have really good friends that are in our church. So I'm saying mm-hmm. maybe our situation is an anomaly, but I think most people have a hard time being friends. And actually, there's generations of pastors that have been told, don't be friends with people in your church.
Yeah.
Because it will destroy you. Hmm. I understand that, because there is a vulnerability danger of exposure to you being human.
Yeah.
We've tried to walk and just be human, be ourselves no matter what. So listen to our podcast. It is what it is. But the quiet part out loud is, you may not want to be really good friends with your pastor because you may not like what you see. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You may not like to see that they're human.
Yeah. And if you have an expectation that they wouldn't be human, you know.
So if you heard the expression,
watch them with their kids. You'll find out.
Well, have you heard the expression, like, watching the sausage being made?
Oh, yeah.
Some people just can't handle watching the sausage being made. They just want to eat the sausage, you know?
Yeah.
And so being friends with the pastor is watching the sausage being made.
Yeah.
And it's a little gross and uncomfortable and awkward. And then you realize they're human. And if you can handle that, you could be a great encouragement to a pastor
mm-hmm.
that they can just be themselves. If you can't handle that, just eat the sausage, enjoy it, and then, you know, go on your merry way. Because every pastor is a human, and every pastor has flaws, and every pastor is imperfect. So,
well, and we're made up of some things that we're potentially even working through and growing in. And, you know, God's grace is just as sufficient for us as it is for you, you know? Yeah. And, like, we need God's grace just as much as you do. Yeah. And we're walking along the sanctification process just like you are.
Yeah.
And I think so in relation to friendship, one of the greatest assets of a good friend is their ability to be humble and to really walk with you and point you to what God has, and not even really tell you what to do or how to act or what direction, what decision you should make,
mm-hmm.
but encourage you to follow the one who does. Yep. You said something like, dude, we were recently part of a memorial service it wasn't a memorial service. It was a stinking wedding. Holy crap. Yeah, that was
maybe that's same
different.
Thing. Maybe that's
no,
same thing.
It's not
quite part of life. Memorial service, wedding.
It was
funerals.
Really good. It was intimate. But you said the best advice that you could give anyone is find Jesus and do what he says. Yep. And it was Mary,
mm-hmm.
you know, that the story of when Jesus turned water into wine.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was just
first
a simple
recorded miracle.
It was a simple encouragement, simple message. It wasn't long. I think the wedding was like, you know,
8 minutes,
15 no, minutes yeah, total 15. Out of everything. And I was just like, dude, that is good.
I call those shotgun weddings until I realized what a shotgun wedding was. So I can't call them that anymore.
Can't call them that anymore.
I'm kidding.
But I think humility is a big
yeah.
piece of finding friends and then vulnerability, putting yourself in a position to have friends because a lot of times we just want to sit in our house.
Along those lines, I think a really, really good friend will always, I mean, like, one of the gauges for me is this my friend? Can I cut up with them and laugh with them? Mm-hmm. Can I cry with them and can they see me cry? Can I go on vacation with them? Do I trust my family with them? Mm. There's people that I know, that I love, that I'd call them friends, but heck no, do I trust my family with them? Mm. So they're not in the, you know, they're not the Peter, James, John, you know, they're not in that one. But there's people that I'd hand my keys to and say, hey, take care of my family while I'm gone. That's a friend. You know what I'm saying? And I think as the older you get, the more valuable those can become. And if you're in a position right now where you don't have that, the way to, yes, we're nearing the end of our podcast and we get the alarm for the same thing, right?
Yep.
Sweet.
Same thing.
Awesome.
When I reset.
So here's what I think. The older we get, the harder this is. But I will say the investment's worth it. Mm-hmm. It takes time. It takes awareness. You can't just show up in someone, say someone, can you be my friend? And then it just seems awkward. You know what I'm saying? It's got to be chemically, like you got to have good chemistry. Interests are always, it's good to align with interests. Mm-hmm. And then it's going to take some time. And unfortunately, the older we get, the less time we have. And so, you know, I do a lot of funerals. For some reason, I'm the funeral pastor and they come in threes. And so whenever one happens, I know I'm going to be doing three. It's like boom, 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 boom. Boom, boom, boom. That's just kind of been my ministry, which is a curse and a blessing because I get to walk with people. But some of the most interesting funerals are of really, really old people, and to look around and to see who's there and not there. Because the older you are, the less people are going to be sitting at your funeral. It's going to be kids and grandkids and the next generation, you know, if you were worth a crap. You know, I hate to say it like that, but that's kind of the truth. But the interesting, a couple of years ago, I did a funeral for this really old gentleman, and there was another guy that was older than him, and he came up smiling, and I was like, why are you smiling? He goes, because I've outlasted all my friends. And I'm like, you turd. Like, I don't want to outlast all my friends. That seems sad, but this guy was smiling like, I outlasted all my friends. Well, that kind of sucks. Yeah. Because at his funeral, there's not going to be anybody there.
Right.
And so it's kind of like,
passed on.
But.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know that I have any more valuable thoughts.
It's worth the investment is all I got to say. It takes time. It's worth the investment. Put yourself out there. I think what you said earlier is probably the best tip and best advice is if you want to have friends, you're going to have to put yourself out there and you may get hurt, but you try a few times and you're going to find that person that's going to walk with you. You know, you're going to find that person that has common interests, or maybe they're wildly different. I let it slip last night that I really like pedicures. And one of my friends looked at me and rolled his eyes. And I said, dude, we're still friends. I mean, I'm sitting there as the only man in the salon and I'm looking around going, my friends are stupid. They should come here and enjoy this. I found the secret, you know, which is getting your toenails cut and then, you know, getting your toes worked on. It's like, it's the most magical. I will never apologize.
Massage on your shins.
Yeah. They give you those hot stones and they you want to die because they're so hot. You think your flesh is going to burn off. But then you just walk out on floating on air. Why wouldn't I do that?
Dude, I had one pedicure.
If you're judging me right now, I don't care. I don't care. Go get a pedicure.
Yeah, go get a pedicure.
I'll buy you a freaking gift card. Go get a pedicure.
Dude, it's... I literally felt I've only had one in my life.
Oh,
and when I walked out,
I
felt like I was walking on pillows. Yeah. It was the most interesting experience.
And you're like, oh, man, it never ends. And then a month later, you got to do it again. So I'm on a monthly schedule, dude.
No, dude, yes. I can't.
Me and Christy, that's our day off.
Oh, really?
We take our day off and it opens at 10 and we're the first ones to walk in. And here's your hot tea and here's your stuff. Oh, it's so magical, dude.
When our kids get older,
it's relationship building with my wife, you know. So,
oh, I'm in on that.
It's so good.
There ain't no shame in my game. I'm in.
But I did this. I would do it even without Kristen. So that's how good it is. So,
oh, I'd do it.
So your friends will judge you, but if they're okay with you getting a pedicure and they'll still be your friend, there, you got a good friend there, you know.
As a man.
And then and then I judge them for cutting deer's heads off and stuff. So it's kind of like.
So here's like, the level.
I'm not going to do that, but I'm glad that you're doing it.
Here's how we can define the tiers, the tiers of friendship. If you're okay with your friend getting a pedicure, that's like you're a good friend.
Yeah.
But best friends will pay for you to go get a pedicure.
and go with you.
Oh no, that's like best friend.
Like you're sitting there holding hands.
That's BFF, dude. Best friend for life.
And looking into each other's eyes and whispering sweet nothings in the air. You know.
No,
I'm kidding. That might be, that's gross.
That might be somebody who's waiting to like put you on social media. And then
that's actually funny. Oh crap, that's not a good friend, dude. That's someone you need to run from. So
yeah,
it's interesting because I think in the world that we live in, loneliness is on an all-time high.
Mm-hmm.
And isolation has become so normal because we don't need people to live. And the trick and the dirty secret is we actually do. And we've convinced ourselves that I don't need human touch.
Yeah.
And therefore, I can sit at home, be on my phone, order Amazon, order takeout delivery. I never have to see a soul. I can go to work in my cubicle, go home, and I'm killing myself by not having human touch and friendship. One of the things I do, which is creepy for some people, but one of the things I do here at Bethel is make sure that I somehow touch everyone that I come in contact with, whether it's a handshake, touch their elbow. I'm not a creepy toucher. I'm just like,
right.
I'm a toucher.
Hand on the shoulder.
And the reason I touch is because some people go their whole week with zero human touch. And it's so healthy to have human touch that's important. Now, if you're a creeper and you're wanting to touch people just to touch people, stop that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the human interaction that's necessary for survival.
Yeah. And it's so interesting how God built us. And I like, that's why I brought up humility, because it truly is a prideful thought to say, I can do this on my own.
Yeah.
I can make it through life on my own. I'm good. I don't need help. I don't need anyone's help. I can figure this out. And that truly is a prideful thought, and you will find yourself in isolation and lonely.
Yep.
If you actively live that thought out.
Yep.
But if you have humility and you say, I actually need other people.
Yep.
Then I think you'll lean in to pursue it. I think you'll lean in to put yourself in positions to meet new people, find people that are in alignment with you and moving in the same direction and develop good friendships because you recognize that they are, friends are vital. Yeah. You cannot live without them.
So don't do it alone. Like don't do this journey alone. When you go, if you're a golfer, take someone to golf with you. You know, the quickest way to get friends is to work out with them. Like go to CrossFit and be a CrossFitter. Those are some people that have a bond that I don't understand. I mean, I understand it cause I've done it, but talk about it. Deep friendships quick because you're suffering.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You're going through also, crisis together every day.
I'm a pastor, so I can't get away from this, but go to church. I mean, seriously, you'll find a bunch of knuckleheads and you'll find a bunch of hypocrites and you'll find a bunch of people that aren't what they say they are, but you'll be able to find some friends there because they're just like you, you know? So get into church, join a gym. Don't do it alone. Just always look for someone. Even if you're walking around the neighborhood, ask someone to go with you, you know? Mm-hmm. And I have to force myself into this because I enjoy alone time, even though I enjoy people time. So, but don't do it alone, you know?
And a lot of times we don't, this is a specific man thing, I think, but our pride says we don't need help. And stemming from that is like, when you ask someone to help you, like, oftentimes those are the people that you end up bonding with because you realize that they're willing to help
together. Yeah.
And then you're humble enough to ask for it. You know what I mean? And people are looking for people like that.
And if you ask someone to help you move on a Saturday morning at 7 o'clock and they show up, man, they're good friends. Because I'm gonna ghost you and not show up. I'm kidding. If I say I'm going to show up, I'll show up. But
I was like, you have some insight because like, I actually am helping somebody move at 7 o'clock on Saturday.
Oh, crap. How'd you agree to 7 o'clock on a Saturday?
Because, dude, it's like you got to just get up and get it going. I'll take a cold plunge at 6:30.
You must be good friends with them, dude.
Yeah, I am.
You must be. That's true friendship there. That's the dangers of having a truck. Having a truck is...
It has nothing to do with the truck. It has something to do with my muscles because I work out.
Oh, true. Okay. That's another reason to work out.
That was vanity. And
it was vanity? It was probably true. But, well, hey, this was fun. Thanks, man.
Yeah.
This is my name's Ray, by the way.
And I'm Ruben.
And this is the Rabbit Hole Ramble. It's the podcast where we say the quiet part
out loud.
Oh, yeah.
Almost said your part.
If you would have said my part, I would have been like ticked. I'm trying to get over here to our producer.
Our producer.
Hey, by the way.
Ghosted us. He didn't ghost us,
actually.
No, you're right. He did.
He's such a good man. So, Chris, we love you. We missed you today, obviously. And people that are listening missed you because you make this thing better.
If this episode was not very good, then you know that we really do need a producer. Right. Chris is awesome.
So, love you, Chris.
Peace.
You
yeet.
Heard nothing. I cannot believe you said peace, dude.
I'm so sorry.
I'm deleting that from the podcast.
Oh, do it. Do it. Oh, no. Delete me. Delete my whole part.
Then it would be awkward. Like, no, that'd be awkward, dude.
Oh, dude.
He's talking to himself. He's talking to himself.
You can't do it.
Can't do this alone, man. Thanks for being my friend. Peace.
Thanks for being my friend. Yeet.
You got a friend. Oh, we don't.